Hello and welcome to our Voices in Montessori podcast. Dr. Montessori said, an education capable of saving humanity is no small undertaking. We agree. So let's get to work. I'm Tamara Sheasley-Ballas, and in today's episode, we're talking about how we create harmony in our school environments through courageous conversations. I am absolutely delighted to have Cassie Mackey, M.E.D., with us today. I have to tell you, I saw Cassie present at a conference, the AMS National Conference, and I sat on the floor in order to be able to be in her session, and she knocked my socks off. And we started pursuing her to be the other mentor, the co-lead of our mentoring community for leadership. And she just told me today, she said yes.
And I said yes to the dress.
She said yes. And we're so excited. I feel like I just got asked to prom. I really do. Or somebody said yes when I asked them to prom, right? So anyway, so let me tell you who Cassie is, and you'll know why I'm so excited. So Cassie's passionate about helping communities create identity-safe spaces where people are encouraged to make changes to improve their relationships. Cassie's been in the Montessori field for 30 years as a teacher and a school leader. She is currently an American Montessori Society School Accreditation Commissioner and is an Association Montessori International AMI School Administrator and AMS Anti-Bias, Anti-Racist Certified. She consults with a number of schools, is leading a huge number of initiatives in the Montessori community, and provides advice to Montessori schools all over on how to create and generate positive and lasting change in their community. Welcome, Cassie.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy and honored to be here today. And I just am thrilled with what Greenspring is doing for the Montessori community. So any part I can have in it, it is a pleasure to really support the Montessori movement so that we can get it in front of every child in the world. That's our dream. That's our hope. That's the work.
And do it well, right? And really, you can have a Montessori community, but the truth is, if it's not being done well, that's not of service in the same way. We have to have our communities be strong and vibrant and harmonious. And we have to have reflected in our organizations what we see in our Montessori classrooms, that harmony and beauty. So that is a part. I think those are the keys to the kingdom. And I'm so happy to have you here, because I really will tell you your coaching workshop was excellent. So we're going to dig in. Okay. So first, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story and how you discovered courageous conversations?
Well, this is an interesting story, because I was a 9 to 12 teacher for a long, long time. I actually taught with my husband, and our little dog was our school dog. So it's definitely a family affair. And I really believe in being the adult that I wanted my students to be when they grew up. And one of my students was a child who had a heart condition, and he had two open heart surgeries, and he was going in for another one in New York. And I'm in Arizona, and his mother, who actually was an administrator at her school, she asked me if I would go out to New York with them during this, just really serious operation. And she wanted support for her son and for her. So we went out there, and he was in the recovery room, and he did amazing, but it was still, touch and go and serious. And he was in the recovery room, and his mom and I were on either side of his bed, just whispering things into his ear, positive things, giving him, his hands, rubbing his hands and his feet, and just loving on him and just giving him all this positive vibes for him to heal. And during this course of time, we were sitting on either side of the bed, and we started talking. And we started talking about life and love and children. And then we started talking about our school. And then we started talking about people. And we started venting, and we started gossiping. And this child, in the middle of this, he woke up.
Oh.
And that's the first thing that he heard when he opened his eyes. And he said to me, he said, "Cassie, that isn't your story to tell, because that is something that I would always tell my students, is if it didn't involve you, it wasn't your story." And my heart was broken into 1,000 pieces because that was the moment in time when I realized that I wasn't being the adult I was asking my children to be or to become. And all the way home from New York, it just sat with me. And I said to myself, I am a fraud. I'm a fraud. I've been standing in front of my children and in talking about how to be in a relationship, how to communicate, how to elevate each other. And yet I wasn't doing the same in my life and in my professional life. And at that moment in time, I knew that I had to make some sort of change. And I didn't know how I was going to do it, because how do you do that in a community and get everybody on the same page as you, especially people who didn't have that same kind of experience that I just went through? But that was my goal, is to help my community understand that we were not completely in alignment with what we were teaching our children in the classroom.
I just need you to know that I actually need tissues in here now, because that story so touched and moved me. And I think everyone listening can relate. We have such high standards for the children in the classroom, and what a gift. And yet, how do we live up to those standards ourselves and be the adults that we want to role model, be as role models for these children? So thank you for that vulnerability and being willing to share in that way. I what a powerful wake up moment.
It was. And then it took me some time to figure out what that looked like, because I couldn't just go into my community and say, we have to stop gossiping and venting and we have to start having honest conversations. Mm-hmm. I had to, just much like a Montessori classroom, you have to prepare the environment. Mm-hmm. You have to create a space where that is something that people feel safe in doing. Mm-hmm. Because courageous conversation occurs when people choose to engage in this humanistic manner with what they honestly think and feel, so that others can also share their messages without feeling judged. Mm-hmm. And you can respond to each other without feeling afraid. Mm-hmm. And that's the key. So many people don't feel comfortable speaking in honest truths because they're afraid of what that means or what could happen to them professionally or personally.
Right. They come from this place of fear, right? That if they say something may happen to them. It's that old part of our brain, the saber-toothed tiger is always chasing us. And we have to be vigilant about giving safety cues over and over and over to people so they know that they're safe and they need the skills. So we'll get there. I know we'll get there. So talk about how you've seen these skills of courageous conversations. Like, why are they so important for our school communities?
I feel that, again, I've said this before in a different way, but we cannot teach what we do not practice. I'm going to say that again. We cannot teach what we do not practice. And teaching is a serious business. So we know this, and it requires us to become the kind of people we hope our children will grow up to be. I've said that earlier. And it requires us to work on our insides. And that is what Dr. Montessori spoke to us about when she was referring to developing the spirit of the teacher and the educator. And it requires us to constantly push forward, to learn, to grow, and to improve our lives continually, and to find ways of reshaping ourselves so we can be the best we can for our students. And it's our willingness to understand what honest communication can do in order to help our students to develop those interpersonal and intrapersonal skills. Mm. And I also wanted to make sure that I was building a community that actively brought issues to the surface, mm-hmm. where we could challenge them and we could celebrate the thinking and the logic of different points of views. Mm-hmm. That was really important for me because I felt that there was voices that were being silenced, either by leadership and not intentionally, mm-hmm. but were being silenced, or because people did not feel safe, mm-hmm. that or confident. Also, it might not have been because of administration. It was just because some people just did not feel confident to speak their truth and have honesty. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the effects of just kind of eliminating even gossip and venting was huge. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of where we started, because I needed to build a community of trust and respect. We talk about that for our Montessori communities all the time, mm-hmm. but how do you do that? Mm-hmm. How do you really build a community of trust and respect? And I feel that a big part of it is eradicating gossip and venting. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be good for the well-being of the student as well as the whole community. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to invoke a community that really elevated curiosity. And mm-hmm. I wanted to move away from blame, mm-hmm. and pointing fingers to understanding. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to move away from winning a conversation towards coming towards common ground and walking away with more insight. And I also think it really helps with change. And if we're going to continue to grow, we want our change to be solid. And I noticed that when we were honest, our changes were solid and they were sustainable. The action really proved to make something happen, whether it was something small or something big. But without these honest conversations, mm-hmm. our change wasn't really something that was sustainable.
That, I mean, it sounds so beautiful and so powerful. Can you talk about how you took your staff from a staff who, like many, right, didn't have these skills, didn't have this training? Many, many guides, many, many people who are working with children, they are drawn to children. They love little ones. And thank goodness, we're so grateful for that important work. But they're not necessarily excited about having hard conversations with adults. It's so outside of so many of our wheelhouses when we come into this work. Tell us the journey you took your staff on, and how did you get them there?
So when we started, I'm very big on metaphors and imagery. Okay. So I brought in a candle, and I usually use that when I go into schools now. And I wanted to remind them that we're here to protect the light of the child. Mm. And we do that so well. But then we're also here to protect the light of our colleagues and our families. And most importantly, we are here to protect the light of ourselves. Mm. And so it was three candles. I give people three candles to remember that, to remember the child, ourselves, and our colleagues or the adults in our community. Mm. And that is our job. That is what we have been called on to do, is to protect this light. That's how we create harmony. That's how we're going to change humanity, is if we are the caretakers of this light. And everybody has it. And so that's where I started from. The second thing that I really talked about was loyalty. This is what I was seeing happening in our community, is that people really felt a loyalty to each other, which was great. Mm. But this loyalty was coming in between having these hard conversations, because they didn't want to hurt people's feelings, because this is my partner in my classroom. I don't want to make them feel bad because they really are doing a great job. Mm. I don't want to say anything because this teacher is actually my son's best friend's mom. You know how everything in a community, they're all so interrelated, all the relationships. Mm-hmm. So I noticed that people were just a little bit more loyal to the adults in the community. And we had to shift our focus to the loyalty of the child. Mm-hmm. We had to be loyal to the child first. All our decisions, all our communications, all our actions had to be in service of the child. Mm-hmm. And so that is what we started to talk about. So for example, this is something very simple, but one of my leads was having a hard time with her assistants. I call them partners in the classroom, mm-hmm. with her partner coming to school late. Mm-hmm. And this partner was amazing. And so everything she brought to the community, into that classroom, was fantastic. So her lead did not want to say anything about her coming in late every day. Mm-hmm. But it was affecting her, because instead of her preparing her morning lesson, she had to get the classroom ready. Mm-hmm. And she was always running behind because she had to do this partner's work, because she was always coming in late. And they never had time to talk because she was scooting in right when the children were coming in. Mm-hmm. And so when we were having this conversation, I said, let's look at your compass. Where is it pointing to? And it was pointing to being more loyal to the partner than it was towards the student. And maybe loyalty is not the right word, but her focus was on serving her partner more than she was serving the children.
Can I just pause you 1 second? Sure. I have to, the compass image, what a great idea. We talk mm-hmm. about that all the time. What, you know, is the child at the center of this decision, especially around not talking to people directly? But I never have thought about a compass image. Okay, we're going to put a pin in the compass and we're coming back to that. Okay. Okay. Sure. All right. So.
And so at that point, a light kind of went on in her eyes and she said, you're right. And I said, and there's ways having these conversations that will inspire somebody to want to be better and do better for the children in the community. Mm. These conversations aren't about getting somebody in trouble mm-hmm. or making somebody feel that they're less than. Mm-hmm. It's about giving them the opportunity to grow and change and become elevated in their purpose for their students. Mm-hmm. And so she was one of the first ones I facilitated a courageous conversation with this partner, and it went beautifully. Mm-hmm. It went beautifully. And we actually created, I call them growth and transformation plans. And it's not punitive. It's not a performance management plan. It's a plan where we sit down as a group and talk about what things need to be in place to support mm-hmm. this staff member in getting to school on time. Mm-hmm. And so we put things into place to support her. Mm-hmm. And she divulged things that were happening at home and mm-hmm. things that were difficult that we didn't know about, that we were able to provide some extra just advice and support and counsel to her mm-hmm. to create this great space and allow her to get to school on time. And it really, again, it was a simple fix, but it was necessary, and it was something that was a fear to the lead teacher that she would harm the spirit or the light or dampen the light of her colleague. Mm-hmm. And what she soon discovered, that it just ignited it. Mm. And she saw this different side of this partner. And it was just kind of a recommitment to her students and to her community. And it served that environment well.
Mm. It served both of them well. It served the children mm-hmm. well. It served the families well. It served the guide, got to learn how to step into the conversation. And the partner also learned something about themselves. What a beautiful example. So then, okay, so you have this, you bring in this piece. Did you train your staff? How did you... Okay, I'm so sorry. We got to circle back to the compass. That's why I put a pin in it. So talk about the compass, then we'll talk about how you support your staff in learning how to do this.
I think the compass, I always use that as a metaphor, because it's about value. I really want it to be a value-based leader. Mm-hmm. And I wanted our school to live in the values of not only Dr. Montessori, but the values that we set down for our school. Mm-hmm. And they sound great on paper. They sound great when we do our, you know, community retreats or our community gatherings, but are we really in alignment with them? And so the compass reminds me of that. It's the moral compass. Mm-hmm. And where is it lining up with? Where is that arrow pointing to? Mm-hmm. And it should always be pointing to our value, and it right. should always be pointing to the child. And we don't always, and the mission of our school. We have these wonderful missions. We talk about our missions. We talk about our vision. But mm-hmm. that isn't always present at every single partner gathering. It's not in the room when we're making decisions and policies. It's mm-hmm. not in the room when we are having conversations with each other or with our families. And so I really wanted to bring that back, to bring that image of a compass back so that it's leading us in the direction of our mission, our vision, our values, and it's leading us in the direction of our children always. And just a side note, when someone would leave our community to explore something else, which was always celebrated, I always gave them a compass and that said, follow your heart always. But then I would always tease them because I would say, once you've gone out and experienced the world, you're going to find yourself back into our community. And lo and behold, so many times we would have faculty and staff come back to our community. So it became a joke that people would say, "This, I'm serious, Cassie, I'm going to leave and go do X, Y, and Z. Do not give me a compass because I do not plan coming back." And then they would come back.
I think I'm going to have to steal that. I love that.
You're going to have to steal that.
That's great. Okay. So I love that. And I love having a way to say to staff, where's your arrow pointing?
Yes. That's what I would say.
And
where's your arrow pointing?
Right. And they get to do the thinking of saying, I'm really going towards loyalty. And I love that because it's not a negative thing to be loyal at all.
No.
It's just, we are pushed to grow beyond that loyalty. And also, I do have to say, beyond our own comfort, because a part of it is we have to step out of what's comfortable for us, of just kind of stepping over it and really embrace that discomfort and for the higher good.
Yes. And I'm glad you said that, because that was another metaphor I used, was a house. And so many times our conversations, people would enter through the back door, or people enter through a side window, or people go in through the chimney. It was rare in our community that people were going straight through the front door when they had an issue to discuss. And I always would tell them, are you going through the front door, or are you going through that side door in the back? And they would always smile at me and say, I went through the side door. Yes, I went through the side door. And usually what happens is that conversation or that issue is going to come back around. It always does, unless you go through that front door and you become uncomfortable, because sometimes it is hard to go through that front door because you're saying, here I am, right through that front door, instead of sneaking in the back way or kind of pushing it through the window so no one sees you. It's really allowing yourself to be vulnerable and say, here I am. I'm ready to have this conversation.
And really, so I want to hash that metaphor out just a little bit for folks who are listening. So to be clear, if you're going in the window, can you give us an example of what it means to go in the window in a conversation?
So going back to the guide and her partner and being late, I would ask her, what are you saying to her? Are you making this clear? And usually they feel that they're making it clear. And so I'll ask them, what exactly are you saying? And usually it is hidden somewhere in the message. So it might be, we missed you for the morning meeting, or I wasn't able to get this accomplished because you were a little late. But there was never that conversation of, you are coming late every day and it's affecting me which is affecting the children. Mm-hmm. And I want to sit down with you and talk to you about why this is happening and what I can do to support you so that this doesn't keep happening. Mm-hmm. So they think they're saying it in a kind way that's not going to hurt someone's feelings, but the message is not landing because mm-hmm. they're having to keep saying it in different ways. Mm-hmm. And until mm-hmm. they say it in a very direct and clear way, mm-hmm. it's not going to be received.
Mm-hmm. And I love that. Again, I'll be using that. I love that. That's a great way to, I can't even tell you how many times people have said to me, oh, well, we talked about that. And I say, we did? When did we talk about that? Oh, remember our last meeting I mentioned, and they came in the side door the window so much that I didn't know we'd had a conversation about something.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. and so I really tell people, the way that I say it is, I don't read between the lines very well. So if you have something you need to tell me, you have to be direct. But I love that. I'm going to use, you got to come in the front door. It's such a yes. beautiful. Okay. So, yes. So tell us how you brought this to your staff. Like, how did you get them on board? Did you bring in a trainer? I know you started bringing it into your individual training and conversations, but the truth is every member of the community needs the information.
Right. So what I did is we started with that intention, because intention is so important. So the protecting the light and service of the child, and where does our loyalty lie? That's where we started. And then again, you have to build the prepared environment. So we started with grace and courtesy. We talk about that all the time in our classroom. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really talk about what that looked like in our community. So we came up with a grace and courtesy agreement. Mm-hmm. And I suggest this for all communities. And it's just a way of being with each other. Mm-hmm. So we defined what grace was. We talked about it being characterized by effortless beauty, kindness, and warmth. We talked about courtesy is similar to politeness, but of a more voluntary and generous nature. Mm. And it's actively meaning to be helpful. Mm. And so I'm going to read this to you because I think it's just so beautiful. And it just translates what I was trying to do on our community. Montessori philosophy uses the phrase grace and courtesy to reflect the way in which we endeavor to engage in all our interactions with ourselves, with others, and with the environment in which we live. Grace and courtesy are not taught so much as modeled and practiced at every level of our work and play. Imagine if every adult behaved in kind and courteous ways in our community, and all our children absorbed that into themselves and then took it out into all their relationships. Grace and courtesy is a tremendous vision and one we hold in our hearts and work towards every day in words and actions. Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes back to my experience with this child in the hospital, because they absorb everything mm-hmm. that we adults do, mm-hmm. whether they're in the room or they're not in the room, mm-hmm. whether they're hearing our voices or not, or they're seeing our actions or not. Mm-hmm. It's this community energy. It's this community harmony we're trying to create. And we have to do that by being vulnerable and by being authentic mm-hmm. and by having grace and courtesy. So we came up with grace and courtesy guidelines as to how we're going to be with each other. The faculty and staff signed it, the parent community and guardians signed it, and the students also signed it. So we had a norm of reference. This is how we're going to be in communion with each other. So that was the start of it. Mm-hmm. And part of that grace and courtesy was referring to the gossip and the venting. And that's where we started. And we just started talking about holding each other able. I don't use the word accountable. I like using the word able. Mm. So we were going to start by holding each other able when people would come to us with gossip or venting, because that is the most dangerous, I think. And it was a little hard sell, the venting part of it, because my faculty and staff felt that they needed a place to vent. And so we had conversations about that. What does that mean? You have a place to, you need a place to vent. People need a place to think out their process, to talk out loud. I'm a talker. I like to talk out loud. I like to talk things through with people. And sometimes that is talking about other people. And that's not fair because I'm taking the opportunity from someone to make their own decisions about somebody. I am putting my own opinions on somebody else. So we talked about what that looks like. And I said, okay, so if you need to vent, why do you need to vent to another colleague about another colleague? So I will give you time to vent. If you need to walk down the canal, I will come into your classroom while you need to go down. We have canals by our school. You can go on a walk so that you can just vent to yourself. Mm-hmm. You can go into a side office and call your partner, call your best friend if you need to go out and vent. If you need to go play basketball and shoot some hoops so that you can cool off and vent with yourself, you can do that. What are other ways that I can make sure that need is being met without you talking to another colleague? So that was the first thing we did. And also you can come to me. So I encourage there be a safe person or safe place. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but one person who is kind of the courageous conversation coach, and that was me. And so people would come to me and talk to me regarding maybe an issue or maybe another staff member. And I was one removed from the head of school. I was the principal of my school. So I was a little safer place to come to. And not that heads of school aren't safe, but we know, if we're being honest, they don't always hear all the truths that need to be heard. Just by being the head of school, that's just kind of the place you're in. And so they would come to me, and they knew that if they came to me to vent, that the next thing I would say is, you need to go directly to this person and have this conversation. And so let's talk about what that looks like. So they knew that I was going to hold them able to that. So we started with venting. And then the second thing is we started with gossiping. And so we came with the phrase, this isn't my story. This isn't my story to hear. This isn't my story to tell. So I encourage you and invite you to go directly to the person that you need to speak to. So I gave people a talking point because that's hard. When someone comes and starts talking to you, so many people just don't say anything. It's kind of one of those, you know, when someone's being bullied, are you a bystander? You are not really helping, but you're also not, you're not involved in it, but you're also not helping. And so I didn't want anybody to be bystanders. We had to be actively involved in this. So that was the talking points we would say. And I encouraged people to start saying those things. And what I did is I went to several of my staff members that I knew that would be able to do this right off the bat. They had that confidence to do that and ability to do that. So I asked them, I told them, you know, the vision that we're going for, I need some, I talk about, remember in my workshop, I talked about dandelions. I want it to blow on a dandelion and have all these seeds just canvas the campus. So these were like my little dandelion seeds that I started sending out into the community that I knew were able to say those things to people. And so the more people who started saying that, and it was hard for people to gossip because people were stopping them before they were able to have that story out in the air. And I was known to go up to people, and there might have been a group of three guides standing outside on the patio. And you know, they're huddled together and their body language, you could tell they're talking about something or someone. And I would go right into that huddle and I'd say, is the person you're talking about represented in this circle? And they would look at me and say, Cassie. And I'd say, are they? And they'd say, no. And so they would break up that group. and they would apologize and they would promise to do better. And that was just it. We would promise to do better. Mm. I was caught myself in gossiping in the middle of trying to create this community. Mm-hmm. It is a hard habit to break. Mm-hmm. It is something that we hide behind by calling it venting. Mm-hmm. Or I'm just talking things through. I'm just trying to get advice. Mm-hmm. But in so, we are pouring water onto the flame of another human being. Mm-hmm. We are not elevating that spirit. We are dousing it. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I started with the grace and courtesy agreements, and then also really working on eradicating venting and gossiping. Mm. That's where we started. And that takes a lot of work. That took us probably a year to just do that.
I'm sure. I just have to say it's like a garden, and you have all a little weed and a little weed, and you're in there really looking and pulling out little every little weed as it comes up. And I think the other reason we do it, and I think it's important to say this, is part of why we gossip is we're trying to connect with the person that we're sharing with. And so it's a relationship bid, but it's what ends up happening is the person who's holding that for us, they may enjoy the moment, but their trust for us then diminishes, because all of a sudden they know we're willing to talk about someone else to them. So why would we not be willing to talk to about them to someone else? I mean, it really is such a critical element of safe communities to have a structure around this. And I love the language you're bringing to this. I love the intentionality and what a gift to a community and to ourselves as human beings to be called to our highest self and to be held able. Never heard that before. I love that. Held able to who we really are in our essence, which I think human beings in our essence really are designed to operate at this higher level. And these are patterns and habits that we've fallen into along the way. So thank you. I love, love, love that. So please, please. So you spend a year pulling out the weeds and also watering the parts that you want to build and really nurturing that. And you give them a safe place to come and work things through so that then they have the language to be able to have direct conversations. The school as a whole, the community as a whole knows that the intention is to hold the light for everyone, all of those pieces. Okay. And then what?
And then I started facilitating courageous conversations. Mm. And I was in every courageous conversation there was for about a year. And so when two colleagues would come together, I would set the intention of the meeting. I would remind them that we were in practice. We were practicing this. Mm. And some people come to the table with those skills already. Mm-hmm. I feel that I came out of the womb ready to have conversations. And I have to remember that other people don't feel as comfortable with having those direct conversations. Mm-hmm. And there was part of me, though, even coming out of the womb with that, where I really had to soften my edges and make sure that my message was being delivered in a way that they could receive it. Mm-hmm. And that was where my coaching came in. And I really didn't have a facilitator myself. It really came from instincts on how it was to be human with each other. Mm-hmm. And I learned this through my leadership capacity, as I wouldn't have been able to do that, you know, 10 years prior to that. Mm-hmm. I really learned how to be vulnerable, how to be, to empathize, how to be curious, and how to ask questions, and how to really try to understand where somebody else is coming from in order to be able to resolve an issue, because there is my needs and there is somebody else's needs. Mm-hmm. And we have to redefine the needs so that we can make sure everybody's needs get met. Mm-hmm. So we have to ask another question so it serves both of us. So I was in those meetings all the time, and I would stop and I would coach and I'd say, so when you start using this language, it really makes somebody else feel less than, it makes them feel that you are in judgment. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember that your intention always has impact. And we don't often talk about impact. And that is one thing that people would often say is that wasn't my intention, which it usually wasn't, but we have to start talking about impact. Mm-hmm. I know it wasn't your intention, but let me tell you what the impact was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I want you to think of not only your intention, but all the possible impacts mm-hmm. of what you're saying. And so that's kind of what I did for another probably year, is have these conversations. And I knew that it was working when people stopped coming to me and asking to vent, and also when I stopped being asked to be a part of these conversations because they didn't need me anymore. I worked myself out of a job because they were becoming so good at having these courageous conversations with each other. And the ultimate goal, Tamara, is to not even call it courageous conversations, but just conversations, is they were learning how to have conversations with each other so that they could be happy, they could move forward, and they could get things done in the service of the child. The last thing that I did was to make sure that this was part of our interview process and that when we interviewed new partners for our community, they understood what coaching was, because so many people say they're open to coaching, but they don't quite know what that looks like. And the second thing is I always let them know we are a courageous conversation school. We practice courageous conversation. Let me talk to you about what that looks like. And that is a meeting in itself, because we spent so much time creating this culture for it. I wanted to make sure that the new partners coming in understood that this is what was expected. Because oftentimes I will go into schools and people will say to me, I just don't like conflict. I'm not willing to have that conversation. I will not have that conversation. I'm just going to go about my business. I'm going to do what I need to do, but I'm unwilling to have this conversation. And in this community, that wasn't allowed. And people knowing that that's what was going to be expected is kind. So there's clarity and kindness, right? There's kindness and clarity. So Brené Brown would say that. And so people knew what they were coming into, because I wanted to protect this community that we had built. And some people weren't capable. And we had some people who actually left our community. They weren't let go. We didn't let them go, but they weren't in a place where they were able to have those honest conversations with themselves, let alone with other people.
Well, it's a real challenge, because we are not in a culture that has courageous conversations. We're not usually brought up in homes where we would have learned those skills. So these can be really brand new skills for us. So is there a structure that you recommend for people when they're stepping into a courageous conversation? Is there any kind of framework that you're kind of offering? I know, for example, I have a peace table method I use for adults. Now, that's when two people or three are in it together, right? They have things they need to say to each other. And so we have a structure where we set the intention together. We talk about having to be honest, and then there's a model where one person talks first and the other person's job is for them to feel heard. Is there any structure around that for courageous conversations, or is it more getting clear on what needs to be communicated and then figuring out how you approach that?
What I did as a courageous conversation coach, and this is really helpful, is when I started doing this, I would meet with both people. And what was helpful to that in the conversation is that I was able to understand the underlying kind of issues that were residing in both of the participants.
Now, you met with them individually?
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
And I just kind of took notes, so that when I knew someone would be uncomfortable bringing something up, I was able to bring it up in a way that didn't put anybody on the spot. Mm-hmm. So, and they were always afraid. And I said, I'm not going to say Tamara said, when I was talking to Tamara, Tamara said, and so I would bring up a question, or I would bring something up so that they just could walk into the subject. And it was a natural way of bringing it up. And when they saw me doing this, then they were able to do that for themselves as time went on. So I also would ask them to sit down and talk about individually. They would sit down and write down kind of, I had a questionnaire that they would fill out before a conversation. Mm. And I also had a post questionnaire that they would fill out after a conversation, so that they can reflect back on how it went. And they stopped using those. That was just kind of at the beginning when they were learning how to do this. And when I go and work with schools, we create that. Mm-hmm. I don't have something that I give to schools, because I think that this process was so powerful because everybody was involved in it. Mm-hmm. I didn't come in and say, this is the Courageous Conversation Program. This is how you're going to have conversations. These are the norms that we're going to follow. These are the questions we're going to ask. It was something that we created together. Mm. So the first thing we did as a community is create a definition of what Courageous Conversation means for us. And the one I read to you, that was our Courageous Conversation. Mm-hmm. And then we came up with tenets. What are the things that have to show up in a courageous conversation? Mm. What does that look like? And I think we came up with 21 tenets. Wow. And we started them with be present. Okay, what does be present mean? And then we talked about what being present meant. Mm-hmm. Be curious. What does curiosity look like? Mm-hmm. And then we came up with things that look like. So they could look at these things and say, all right, I understand what it means to be vulnerable. I understand what it means to be curious. I understand what it means to be an active listener. Mm-hmm. I understand what it means to be reflective, because mm-hmm. we're always talking about reflection, but what does that really look like? So mm-hmm. those are the things that I think, those conversations are the things that I really think help them understand what it means to be in conversation with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then also having a courageous conversation coach come in and be that facilitator to help them and show them where they were putting up barriers, or when they were not being curious, or they were using judgment statements. Mm-hmm. Because when we're in a conversation, it's such a relief, even though it might have been a little bit nerve-wracking at first to have somebody in the conversation, but it makes it very nice for someone to sit back objectively and observe a conversation mm-hmm. and be able to tell you, do you know that when you start getting fired up, you lean forward, and that has the other person lean back because it feels a little aggressive. And someone might say to you, "I had no idea I did that," mm-hmm. and I didn't feel aggressive at the time. I was just passionate about what I was saying. So having a communication coach mm-hmm. was so great for them because they didn't realize certain things that they were doing. Mm-hmm. And so some of the things were just really simple tweaks that they could do to change how they were receiving information or relaying information.
Mm-hmm. That's so powerful. I think definitely we'd love to have you come in and do a workshop and work with our Greenspring Montessori School, because we've been working for years on developing these skills, and you've offered today some things that I haven't heard before. I really appreciate the scope of how much work you've done in this area and how much you've given us today. I know that I've learned so much, and I imagine everyone listening has as well. Thank you so much, Cassie.
Thank you.
Really.
You're welcome.
Anything, any final notes you want to offer before we sign off today?
I just want to say that I've seen communities transform because of this practice. Mm. And we would have people come onto our campus that were interning, or they were observing from other schools or from training centers. And they would often say to me, "What is it about this community? There's something different about this community." And it allowed me to see that other people could feel that harmony we were trying to create. And don't get me wrong, this is hard. This is hard work, and it doesn't always work well. Those conversations aren't always beautiful. Sometimes we'd have to stop a conversation and come back to it. And we don't always succeed in it. And we fumble and we make mistakes, but we have our compass pointing in the right direction, and we are all in it together, and we're holding that space for each other to be in a place where you can have honest conversation, and you will see your community transform. And then what we did is then we brought the family community into it, and we started having courageous conversations with parents and guardians. And so, and then the children, of course, started having courageous conversation with their guides as well as with each other. So it really, truly became a whole community aspect. But I wanted to end with one quote, and it's the philosopher I love the most. And it is, well, two quotes. One is, this is one thing I said to my staff when we were starting this initiative. This is from the Story People. And it says, I don't know who will become in the days ahead. I only know the quiet voice in my heart that says we'll become it together. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of my call to action. And then what I always say to people when we're about to have a courageous conversation, this is from Rumi. And he said, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doings, there is a field, and I'll meet you there. And that's what I want you to think of is the courageous conversation is being in that field, that open space with blue skies and the wildflowers around you. And just knowing that we are a small part of this great humanity. And in doing this, we are doing our part to save humanity. And that is our call to action from Dr. Montessori.
What a beautiful way to end this podcast. And what a gift to the Montessori community as a whole. Thank you. Can you share with people how to get in touch with you? Because Cassie's available as a consultant for Montessori schools. And so how do they get in touch with you?
So you can actually email me. And my email is CassieMackey11, CassieMackey11, 11@gmail.com.
Perfect. And we'll have that information in our show notes as well.
That's right.
For those of you who are not going to look at the show notes, if you're like me, I want to make sure you have that information. And I just want to say thank you again, Cassie. I'm so excited.
Thank you so much for having me here, Tamara.
To be a mentor with you this year, if I had had the opportunity to have someone supporting me every week as a new school leader and have that opportunity so that I didn't have to learn all these lessons the hard way and I didn't feel so isolated and I had a cohort of people coming together, I know that would have made a tremendous difference, not just for me as a school leader, but for everyone I touch, for every student, for every family, for every adult in our community who serves our school. And so for those of you who are stepping into leadership or have in the last couple years, take a look at our mentoring page. It's something we're really excited about what we have to offer. And Cassie and I are really looking forward to serving the community together in that way. And
it goes right along courageous conversation because being a head of school, a principal of a school is lonely. It can be isolating, and we do not have to do this work by ourselves. You have a community of leaders that you can be a part of, and you can vent and to us because we are here to give that advice and to counsel and to learn from you as well. This is a collaborative sharing of wisdom.
Yes. Love that. That's great. Yes. So, listeners, we invite you to subscribe to our podcast and hear the latest episodes in the conversation on Facebook and Instagram. Take a look at our website, greenspringcenter.org, for the show notes for today, and also to check out our conference in June and our mentoring communities. We're so grateful you spent your precious time with us today. The work that you're doing is the work and is making the difference in the world. Thank you for your commitment to children and adolescents and to making our world a better place. We're better together.